Good evening. I'm Karen Ashby, your moderator for tonight's telephone town hall. I welcome you to this live event and would like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Art Haywood of the 4th Senate District will take your calls as he discusses heart health and general wellness. The senator will be joined by Dr. Darby from the Montgomery County Coroner's Office. As a quick reminder, if you have a question and would like to join in the conversation, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, that's going to be star 3 on your keypad to join in and ask a question. So without any further delay, let me welcome State Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you, Terry. Good evening. This is Senator Art Haywood. Welcome to the telephone town hall from my friends and neighbors within the 4th Senate District. I would like to thank everyone who is taking time out of their busy schedule to participate on this call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I appreciate your engagement. Now, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's discussion, press star 3. Yes, press star 3 on your phone. As Terry said, this evening, we will be discussing heart health and general wellness. We are very fortunate to have in this discussion, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Janine Darby, the Montgomery County Coroner. Thank you so much for joining us, and please share some basic information with folks who might be listening now. Thank you, Dr. Darby.
Thank you, Senator Art Haywood, for having me join you tonight for your town hall on heart health and wellness. Good evening, everyone. I'm Dr. Janine Darby. I'm a board-certified family and obesity medicine physician, a wife, a mother of four, and the Montgomery County Coroner. It truly means a lot that you've taken time out of your evening to be a part of this conversation, which is so, so important, topic that we're going to be talking about tonight. When people hear the word coroner, they often think only about death investigation. But one of the most important parts of my role is prevention. So every day my office sees the impact of heart disease in our community, and the reality is far too many of those losses are preventable. Heart disease remains the leading cause of death in the United States and globally. It does not discriminate. It affects men and women. It affects people across racial and economic lines. And in many cases, it develops silently. High blood pressure with no symptoms, elevated cholesterol we can't feel, stress that we normalize, and lifestyles that slowly wear down our bodies. But here's the hopeful part. We have power. And I hope you ask some questions here so you can continue to have these, have power. So we have power in what we eat. We have power in how we move. We have power in managing stress. We have power in knowing our numbers. So that's so important when you go to your doctor, your provider, that you ask and know your numbers. What is your blood pressure number? What is your cholesterol, blood sugar, and weight? And we have the power in seeking care early instead of waiting for a crisis. So hint, hint, prevention. Heart health is not just about avoiding a heart attack. It's about energy. It's about being present for our families. It's about quality of life. It's also about longevity with vitality. As a physician, I've spent years and years and years and years, over 20-plus years of experience helping patients prevent and manage chronic disease and illnesses. As coroner, I've seen what happens when prevention doesn't occur soon enough. And as a wife, mother, and member of this community, I care deeply about making sure our residents have the education and tools they need to live longer, healthier lives. Tonight, we're going to talk about hopefully practical, realistic steps. Some things are, you know, easier said than done sometimes. So we're not going to talk about perfection, but we're going to talk about hopefully some progress that you can make. you know, small changes add up and help in having a healthier lifestyle. And also, let's talk about how we can support one another in building a culture of wellness here in Montgomery County. So this conversation, questions and everything, is more about empowerment, not fear at all. This is about awareness, not judgment. It's also turning whatever information you get this evening into action. So I'm grateful to be here to try to answer your questions and all, you know, to the best of my ability. And I encourage you to listen closely, ask all the questions, and think about one small change you can commit to starting tomorrow. Because protecting your heart and the rest of your body isn't just a medical issue, it's a community responsibility. So let's get started with some questions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Darby. I did just want to let everyone know, because I do represent both Montgomery and Philadelphia counties, we will be responding to questions that people have from both counties about heart health and general wellness. Take it away.
All righty. So we had an online question submitted from Maria. Maria asks, I'm in my 30s. When should I start being concerned with heart health?
So in your 30s, making sure that you're getting your annual physical, so, and also knowing your family history is so important. So asking your family members any type of chronic illnesses to watch out for can help you in planning how to prevent these things. So at the age of 30, is this a woman or male, did you say, or just in 30 in general?
Just in 30.
Okay. In 30s, you're going to start with your annual wellness checks. They'll check your vitals, which to include your heart rate, your blood pressure, and respiration, and also a complete physical exam from head to toe. For women, of course, you know, seeing your gynecologist, or if you have a family practitioner, a doctor, they can also help with that, getting your pap smears done. Also, if you have an early family history of breast cancer in your family, you probably want to have discussions about starting mammogram, although they say wait till 50. I say 40, but, you know, that's a question to have with your physician. Also, getting general routine blood work done, so checking your sugars, checking your kidney function, liver function, cholesterol, thyroid function as well to be included. And if you have any dietary issues, you may want to check some vitamin levels as well.
Thank you. As a quick reminder, if you would like to join in on the conversation and ask a question, please press *3 on your keypad at any point during this call. Again, it's going to be *3 on your keypad to ask a question. Okay, we're going to go live with Francis. Francis, you're live.
Yes. I'd like to know, how do you know the difference between the pain from the heart and the pain from the acid reflux?
That's a great question, because the pain could be either or, right? So the one that could be more life-threatening will be the heart. So if you can't differentiate which is which, of course, the first thing is, you know, if it's less severe, you're going to go make an appointment, hopefully a same-day appointment with your primary care. If not, if it's elevating, it's lasting, you know, more than 24 hours, you're having other symptoms, shortness of breath, of course, you're going to go directly to the ER to get taken care of. And if you can't get, it's so severe that you can't transport yourself, 911.
Thank you, doctor. Now we're going to go live with Monica. Monica, you're live.
Good evening. That was Steph. And I don't know if you just said it because they were taking my question, but just that there's two things. An awareness that heart attacks have different symptoms for women than men that most people aren't aware of. Everyone thinks that a heart attack happening is the tightness in the chest or like an elephant sitting on your chest and pain radiating down the arms or one arm. It's not just that. Mine was in my jaw, like, and neck, like I had been grinding my teeth all night long and all that morning, and several hours went by for me to really recognize and realize that I was having a heart attack. Because just that one thing is
that's a great point you're making, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. Because I think a lot of women are not aware of that, or men, in fact. But so the next question I have is, and yes, smoking is very, very, very addictive, and I'm telling you, it's one of the hardest things to quit. What have you seen as the most successful? I've tried 1-800-QUIT-LINE, which is great, but I've tried the pill, the Chantix. I've tried a few other ways of really just cutting out smoking totally. And what does your statistics say, or what has your experience been as one of the most successful ways of stopping smoking? Over.
Yeah. So this is a great question. So it's going to be individual, right? Everyone responds differently to help. So of course you start with the gum, you start with the patch. There's medication as well, like you mentioned, Chantix. I've had patients that have been successful with that. I've also heard some people had success with hypnosis. and also someone unfortunately getting a life-threatening disease stopped, in my experience.
Alrighty, thank you very much. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question and join in on the conversation, please press *3 at any point during this call. Again, *3 to participate. Doctor, we're going to go live with Kevin. Kevin, you are live.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Kevin, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. I had the mute button on. Sorry about that. I was calling to ask, what does BMI, I know it stands for body mass index, but how do I understand or to read it to know what that means?
Okay, that's a great question, and that topic has been very controversial in the obesity medicine world because women, men, petite individuals and different races, we all analyze that BMI differently. So it's a practical tool to see what your weight is based on your height as well. And so if we're talking about overweight, obesity, so it gives you kind of an idea where you are with your body mass index. And women and men are different. So men tend to have more muscle mass than women, and so, you know, with the muscle, that weighs a lot. So our bodybuilders are going to have a higher BMI, and over 30 is considered obese. So some men with higher muscle mass can be over 30, but doesn't necessarily mean that they have a lot of fat mass, okay? Even with women, some may even have muscle mass more than fat mass over 30 as well, and they're not necessarily obese, but it's just due to the weight of that muscle. So between 25 and 30, that means you're in the overweight category. Anything over 30 is in the obese category. And it's just a practical tool. You have to consider the individual when you're analyzing the weight and having a discussion on treatment plans.
Thank you so much. Our next caller is going to be Donna. Donna, you are live.
Yes, I just want to know, is there a sign for elevated cholesterol? I know that high blood pressure, that's a silent killer, and you don't know if you have it or not. But is there a way to have a sign, or does your body let you know that your cholesterol is elevated?
Great question. So you want to get your cholesterol levels checked. So there's different types of lipoproteins that you're going to have. So we usually talk about the HDL and the LDL and then the total cholesterol when we're analyzing the whole lipid panel. So your good cholesterol is the HDL. And for women, you want that above 40. For males, you want that above 50. So the more HDL on the lipid panel, the better. The LDL is your bad cholesterol. So there's different levels here. So if you have a history of diabetes, type 2, or just diabetes itself, you want to have that number less than 70. And then if you have any cardiac history, you want that to be less than 100. And for anyone with no history of those two things, 130 is the golden number you want it under. But the less of LDL, the better. Your total cholesterol is the total of all the lipoproteins, and there's just more than the HDL and the LDL. So you have to analyze the whole lipid panel together. So if you have a high HDL and a low LDL, but that puts you over the 200 threshold of your total cholesterol, doesn't necessarily mean you have hyperlipidemia. So you have to look at the full picture. So knowing your family history, if there's any familial hyperlipidemia, hypercholesterolemia, you want to know that and get checked sooner than later, because you don't want those cholesterol plaques building up in your blood vessels and such. The other thing you want to be mindful of is your food, making sure you are eliminating, hopefully, as much as you can, saturated fats and stick with the others, with the good fats. So so getting your cholesterol checked, that's the only way to know. If it's higher, you start with some skin it shows up in your skin with some nodules and things like that as well. So, but we won't go down that route right now.
All righty, thank you very much. Our next caller is Angelique. Angelique, you're live.
Hi. First and foremost, thank you for your knowledge and expertise.
Oh, thank you.
Should I proceed with the question?
Please do.
I will be turning 65 in X amount of months, so I'm getting mail and phone calls about Medicare plans and Humana Advantage and things that are foreign to me because I've never, this is new. It's also new. How can I maximize a Medicare package?
Thank you for that question. I'll jump from there because that's not maybe a physician question. So we are not really in a position to give individual advice on which of these many Medicare plans should you accept, if any. I was in a similar situation as you. I was getting ready to turn 65, and I got one set of mail after mail after mail. I got all these mail packages trying to get me to sign on to various plans. So I would ask you to first contact my office for a more individual consultation on various packages. We do have some particular agencies that we refer people to who can walk individuals through the plan options. And yes, there are many, many plan options. The phone number for my office is, please call it 215-242-8171. 215-242-8171. Let them know you're on the telephone town hall tonight, and we will get you connected with someone who can help go through the many complex choices. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. A quick reminder before we continue with questions. If you would like to join in on the conversation and ask a question, please press *3 on your keypad at any point during this conversation. Alrighty, we are going to go live with, Doris. Doris, you're live.
Hi, this is Doris from West Oakland. Thank you for being live. Thank you for the tip top of the conversation, this conversation. What I'd like to know is how do you monitor your child's heart health? My child was having pains in her chest, and we went and had the exam, and they said that she has a little hole in her heart and that nothing really needs to be done right now. But I just would like to hear more about monitoring the child's heart health and what does it mean when they say that, you know, there's a little hole in their heart, but it's not anything significant that needs to be done.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So with some development in the child, so there's an area of the heart in between the atrium, and that's called the foramen ovale. Sometimes that closes right after birth with some kids, and sometimes it opens. So you can hear a murmur sometimes when they're smaller as a baby, and then over time that murmur goes away, that heart murmur. And if your child had chest pain as they're older and they didn't know that, they didn't hear a heart murmur, or they didn't have like a abnormality on their developmental screening in utero or anything like that, that was great for you to follow up. And I will I would recommend that you continue to have your child follow up with the pediatric cardiologist to make sure that hole is closing in time and not causing any other issues, and also monitoring the blood flow and the blood pressure as well, and the size of the heart. So all that's important. So kudos to you, Mom, for checking that out. And the other thing I would say is making sure that you know, the kids love junk food. So, you know, I have a lot of them at home as well. So monitoring and making sure they're getting their fruits and vegetables in. Green vegetables are good, and, you know, healthy fats and stuff. And staying away from the processed foods, the sugary drinks and all that will definitely be helpful. And then putting them into sports and movement, or, you know, dance or something like that. So movement is very important for kids as well. So, like I said, kudos to you for being on top of this.
All righty, thank you. Our next caller is Beverly. Beverly, you're live.
Hi. I have a question about the connection between mammogram and heart health. I had a mammogram done a month and a half or so ago, and they said the mammogram came out fine, but there was some concern about a connection to the heart and that I should see a cardiologist. I made an appointment, but of course it takes weeks to be able to see a cardiologist, so I'm still waiting to get into the office to get more information.
Hmm. Okay. So they saw something on the mammogram that was concerning.
Yes, but the mammogram itself, there was no issue with the breast health as far as they said, there have been some connection to my heart that they saw on the mammogram.
That's interesting. Yeah, because usually it's just the tissue of the breast on mammogram. So I'm wondering if it's like a blood vessel or something that they were seeing. So I'm not really sure how to answer that question. But, you know, follow up with your primary and go from there.
All righty, thank you. Quick reminder for the participants on the call right now, if you would like to ask a question and join in on the conversation, press *3 on your keypad. Again, that's *3. Doctor, our next caller is Virginia. Virginia, you're live.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, Virginia.
Hello?
Hi, Virginia.
How you doing? Good afternoon. Well, good evening. I suffer from low blood pressure. Every time I go to the doctor or I get an exam or go to ER or urgent care anywhere, I always come up with a low blood pressure. I need to find out what can I do to monitor it and what are the symptoms and is it dangerous?
Okay, so I don't know what your numbers are, but if you're feeling symptomatic, that's something that should be checked with your primary care doctor. Also, I would recommend you having like a blood pressure cuff at home to check just in case you become symptomatic and you can be able to give more information to your doctor on what your numbers are at home. The other thing is making sure that you're getting enough fluids in during the day. I'm not sure if you're on any medications because sometimes that can cause problems too. And then if you know that you have low blood pressure, make sure that you're going from sitting to standing slowly or any other motion and position change with your body as well. But definitely get that checked out closely.
All righty. Our next caller is Doe. Doe, you're live.
Hi, Doe.
Yes, it's Doja. Thank you. Good
Doja.
Evening, everyone.
Good
yes,
evening.
Thank you. That's correct. Yes. And thank you, Senator Hayward, for this opportunity, and thank you, Doctor. My question is, you mentioned earlier at the beginning in reference to getting different exams, and one of them was a GYN. So I wanted to know if you could elaborate, please, on why it's important for a female, and I'm in my 70s, to visit a GYN as it relates to heart health. Thank you.
Oh, I think I was basically talking about your general wellness, you know, with the GYN, when we're talking about the person in the 30s, making sure. So GYN is, the Pap smear is a screening tool for cervical cancer. And so if you're in your 70s, you probably are no longer getting Pap smears. And I can break down, like, the recommendations in regards to when you should get that screening as well. So if you are at average risk, so between the ages of 21 and 29 years of age, you should get your Pap smear done every 3 years. Between 30 and 65 years of age, there's several different combinations here. So you can get a Pap smear with HPV, which is human papillomavirus, which is the virus that can lead to cervical cancer. So you can get a Pap and HPV testing every 5 years, and then, or just get a Pap smear every 3 years, or just get the HPV every 5 years. Greater than 65 years of age, you can stop having Pap smears if your screenings have been negative, like three consecutive ones, and you're low risk. So also, you know, and making sure that you get your mammals. You have no family history of breast cancer and your mammogram screening, breast screening has been cleared, you can also elect to stop at the age of 70.
Alrighty, thank you. Our next caller is going to be Kate. Kate, you're live.
Hi, thank you. I was hoping that you could talk about signs of sleep apnea and how that relates to blood pressure and heart health.
Yeah, so sleep apnea is bad. So for your health, for sure, for your heart health. So when you lack oxygen to your heart muscle, that heart muscle changes. You can also create pulmonary hypertension as well, leading to high blood pressure and also leading to pulmonary hypertension and also increasing your risk of heart attack as well. So if you are seeing that you or a family member are having apneic episodes during sleep, it's very important to check that out immediately because, you know, we need oxygen to all our vital organs. So seeing a pulmonologist or first stop is your primary care doctor and then refer to a pulmonologist for further testing for that. They now have home sleep apnea studies, which is great, because there's nothing like mimicking your actual sleep versus going to the sleep lab where it's not your own bed and everything. So those are some other options there.
Thank you very much. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question or join in on the conversation, please just press *3 on your keypad. Again, that's *3 on your keypad to participate. Doctor, we are going to go live with Angel. Angel, you're live.
Hi, Angel.
Angel, are you there? Okay. We'll try to go live with a different caller.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to go live with Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you there?
I'm here. Hello?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Besides gamma patent, what else could I do, get for neuropathy? I can't do gamma patent. And, you know, that's all maybe they want to describe, but I just, gamma patent makes me, when they raise the milligram, it's even worse. And yeah. I don't sleep at night because my legs hurt all night. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that, but I can give you medical advice in regards to the medication. So I would recommend that you follow up with your primary care doctor that knows you better than I do to give you recommendations on the neuropathy that you're experiencing. Because there may be some other issues, and I wouldn't be able to, help you because you're not my patient. So I'm sorry that you're going through that, but I would just refer you to back to your primary care doctor to have a more detailed discussion about that.
Thanks, Doctor. Again, a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad to participate. There was an online submission from James, and James asked, how can I get preventative care if I don't have insurance?
That is a great question. So I know in Philadelphia and also in Montgomery County, they do have health centers that you can go to and get preventative health. I think you'll have to pay like a certain fee structure, but it's not going to break the bank. But that's where I would recommend that you go. And then some urgent cares also have primary care attached, so you can do that too. I know out here is patient care is one of those where they provide some preventative health care as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just would like to add, this is a big challenge in the United States where we do not have health care for everyone. In many countries, many countries, Canada, France, Germany, England, Japan, many countries have health care for all so that everyone gets preventative care. Just like you have roads that we can drive on, they have health care that people can get access to. So this is a big challenge for the nation.
Yes.
And some parts of our community, particularly rural Pennsylvania, is really suffering from access to care. And we suffer from affordability. The lack of affordability keeps people out. So this is a big issue for the legislatures, for elected officials, and for our nation. And I sincerely hope that we get to the point where we recognize that everyone should have health care, that health care is a human right, and that we should have health care for all. We haven't gotten to that point yet. We've got it for 65 and older. To make sure they have access to health care. We've got it for those who are indigent, who really don't have any money. We've got Medicaid. But for all the rest of us, we're mostly dependent upon employers for our health care. And we hope that our nation can mature beyond the system we have and make sure everyone's covered, but this is a big problem that James has identified. Last thing I say on this topic is that 100,000 Pennsylvanians were covered with health care before the current Congress and president that we have. And then we got this Congress, we got this president. They took away some of the financial support for health care. And I have received a report, again, 100,000 Pennsylvanians have dropped their health coverage because it's unaffordable. So this is something we can change, but we will need new leadership to do it. Thanks so much, James. I'll turn it back to Taryn and Dr. Garvey.
Thank you, Senator. There was another online submission from Linda. Linda was asking, what warning signs should we look for when it comes to suicide risk in both seniors and young people?
Yeah, so there's multiple warning signs. So first off, if they talk about it a lot, that's a big one. Give me 1 second here. I have a cheat sheet. Yeah, so we provide these little packets to our families and also to our elderly individuals. Because unfortunately here in Montgomery County, we see one too many suicides that are happening here. And any way that we can help in prevention, that's what we're doing here in the coroner's office as well. So some warning signs are being disconnected and having weak social support, negative, pessimistic view of self or future, just feeling hopeless. Also, feeling like a burden, especially with our elderly individuals, feeling like a burden and shame. Also being abused, abused as a victim or perpetrator. Financial dependence, insecurity, exploitation, especially with our elderly individuals, and just feeling emptiness, depressed, sad, and hopeless as well. So we, you know, looking for those signs in our elderly. With our younger individuals, you know, if they've had attempted suicide before, you know, watching and making sure they have treatment, therapy, and things like that as well. Any journaling for our young folks or writing about not living hopeless. And, you know, with our teens, the good news here in Montgomery County at our office, the coroner's office, is that we're not seeing a lot of teenagers taking their lives. Most of our data here is white males above the age of 40 years old utilizing firearms for suicide. So here we've also started buying gun locks to give out to the community as well to help in prevention. Of course, that's not the only thing, but that can help in having conversations and destigmatizing depression, destigmatizing mental illness and everything. So we definitely talk a lot about that. So people are more willing to share how they're feeling internally. Because a lot of times when we see or hear from families after their loved ones are gone is that they never knew that they were struggling.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Senator.
Sure, no problem, yeah. I would like to add that from a policy perspective, and Dr. Darby provided excellent advice about what we as family members and knowing loved ones should do to help as much as we can. Not that we're going to be able to read everybody's mind, but to help to the extent that we can. In the legislature, though, we have a duty as well as a member of the Pennsylvania State Senate. And what we have proposed is what is often called a red flag law, red flag meaning warning. And this is would take guns out of the hands of someone who's a risk to themselves or others for a short period of time. This decision about when a gun should be taken out of the hands of someone who is a risk to themselves or others is made by a judge, not made by anyone other than a judge. And then get some testimony, some statements about the condition of the person, and then the judge will make a decision about taking the guns away for a short period of time. This legislation is not, I repeat, not long-term taking a gun away. It's only for the short term. Many states have these laws so that individuals can be in a better position to be alive. I'd also like to share that we hear a lot about gun violence in Pennsylvania. Most of the time, we think about homicide because that's what's in the news when someone shoots someone and they kill them. That's in the news. But in Pennsylvania, suicide with a gun is more common than homicide. Let me repeat that. Suicide with a gun is more common than homicide in Pennsylvania. It just doesn't get the attention that homicides do. So, I say that because the many pieces of legislation that we have to try to take guns away from dangerous people so they don't shoot folks. But this particular one is a short-term taking a gun away of someone who's a risk to themselves or others, a decision made by a judge. I've been in support of this legislation. Now, we were close to getting it passed about 6 years ago, but it's certainly very important. Turn it back to Dr. Darby and Karen. Thank you.
Yep. And thank you for doing that work. Gun reform laws need to happen, and I'm glad that this is out there. So thank you, Senator Haywood.
You're welcome.
Thank you both. We are going to go live with our next caller. Ann, you're live.
Thank you for supporting science and for all the people that are calling in with great questions and the answers that Dr. Darby is giving. In general, I want to say we need to support, first of all, to tap into gun violence. It's a nonpartisan issue, and overwhelmingly people want these things in place. But we've allowed things to happen that the masses don't want. And one of them, too, is we need to support Medicare for all. Anything that says it's Medicare that has another word behind it is for profit only. So I encourage anybody who is nearing 65 to look at traditional Medicare. We need all of our people in elected office to make sure that that's the case. We've got, unfortunately, people in high elected office that are making profit over something that has Medicare's word in it and should be called disadvantage, in my opinion. Dr. Darby, I'm calling because when you were earlier talking about cholesterol, I'm aware that there are cholesterol medications that are used in this country that are not used in other countries because they cross the blood-brain barrier. And dementia is a real concern in our nation. I don't know how it stacks up with other countries that are using medications for cholesterol that are considered a concern there, but I wonder if you can address any of those maybe medications in general that pose issues crossing the blood-brain barrier and what cholesterol medications might be a better alternative for people when they're selecting.
Yeah, great question. So any medications that is recommended for cholesterol has side effects, as you know. So, it's also going to be dependent on the individual, what their risks are, their cardiovascular risk, their family history, where they are currently, depending on, and that's going to be dependent on, like I said, the patient and their doctor trying to find the best fit. So, we have the statins, medication, we have omega-3s. So, depending on, like I just stated, that will be a conversation between the patient and their doctor, what fits. I hear you in regards to the dementia issues and the studies and everything. So, but that's just going to have to be a long, extensive, not extensive, but a good conversation between the doctor and patient.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Kim from East Falls. Kim, you are live.
Yes, hi. My question is about the rhythm of your heart. Can you explain the differences between the bradycardia and tachycardia and the AFib?
Right. So bradycardia is the slowing of your heart. So you want your heart rate to be between 70 and 100, okay? Some of our elite athletes, they have heart rates of 40. So, but that would be normal for them. But normal should be between 70 and 100 beats per minute. So bradycardia is anything below 70, sometimes even 60, we call that bradycardia. Tachycardia is anything above 100, okay? And then atrial fibrillation, that's a whole different can of worms there. So it's where your heart is not beating in sync. So you want to hear the lub-dub, which is the boom-boom. So that's the atrium opening and closing, and then you also have your ventricle opening and closing, contracting, I mean, and filling. So they don't do that all. What happens in atrial fibrillation is that your atrium, which is the two chambers on the top, we have four chambers in our heart, as the two chambers on the top are just fibrillating. So they're not in sync with the ventricle, they're not in sync with themselves. And so what happens, that increases your risk of throwing a clot because the blood is not flowing in a good rhythm, and you can throw a clot to your brain and potentially have an embolic stroke that way as well. And so that's why atrial fibrillation can be very life-threatening. But some people can feel if their heart is not beating in sync, they'll feel that fluttering sensation that you can feel on shortness of breath as well. Some people pass out when you're not getting enough blood into the brain. So if you ever feel any symptoms, definitely get that checked out. You'll be able to see, hear bradycardia and tachycardia just with the stethoscope or even on your wrist. You find one of your arteries there. You can also feel the atrial fibrillation through your wrist as well. If you're not at the doctor's office, and then also you can with the EKG, you can see what your heart rhythm is doing as well. And Apple's getting really fancy these days too, where I'm not trying to promote anyone here, any brand, but they have EKGs now on Apple Health.
Alrighty, thank you. Our next caller is going to be Kim from Philadelphia. Kim, you're live.
Hi, Kim.
Hi, Dr. Darby. I just have a question in reference to pharmaceutical products versus holistic. And some of the medication has never been tested on African Americans with pharmaceutical products. And that's why I believe sometimes as an African American that we have a hard time with the diabetes, neuropathy, blood sugar levels, where we could use natural products that can kind of help support some of those problems that we have. What is your take? Because I know that in lowering sometimes blood pressure, you can eat grapefruits And I know that with diabetes, it's a parasite that actually sits on the pancreas. What is your take on that?
What did you say, a parasite on the pancreas? Is that what you just said?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with diabetes, there's two different types of diabetes. So there's diabetes type 1, which is an autoimmune process where you're not making insulin in the pancreas. And the insulin is made with the beta cells of the pancreas. And then diabetes type 2 is what we hear more as we get older, is where, you know, the beta cells are making less insulin, so your sugar, which is glucose, is no longer going into the cells appropriately. And so with that being said, it's wreaking havoc on your blood vessels, from the larger ones to the tiny ones. And the capillaries are the ones that get beat up. Diabetes is the number one cause for blindness. You get diabetic retinopathy, and you can get blindness from that. Also, you know, the capillaries in your feet, you know, you're seeing ulcers and amputations due to the inflammation of the blood vessels down there. So when we talk about pharmaceuticals versus supplementation, just a reminder that any supplements that are over the counter, they are not, there's no FDA approved supplements. So supplements can be bad as well, depending on the individual, and also they are not, and if they're not certified, if it's not a certified laboratory as well. So there's no oversight for supplements, okay? Whereas prescribed pharmaceutical medications, there's oversight there. There's testing, there's studies as well. And I understand, you know, the lack of African Americans with some of these studies. You're right. And then also there's not enough participants as well for certain studies on medications that include African American individuals. So there's oversight with prescription drugs, and they have to go through a very lengthy process in order to even be prescribed. And the FDA is the one that approves these medications, whereas supplements are not approved by anyone, and you have to be very careful.
Thank you, Doctor. We are going to go live with Linda. Linda, you're live.
Hello, I had a question about, I have a son that is in a mental health facility, and with his health, my concern is him being able to consent for his care, and him not being able to actually know exactly what it means, whatever the need is, him not being able to know whether, and he's an adult, but how can he give consent if he don't really know what's going on?
That's a great question. You know, it sounds like you're a great support system for him. And then the other thing is if they've done a psychological evaluation to see if he's competent or not in making those health decisions, that would be helpful. But it sounds like, you know, he has a great support system, and I think, you know, you staying involved will definitely help him through you know, his hospitalization and for the future moving forward.
Thank you. Our next caller is Pam. Pam, you're live.
Hi, yes. Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. I had been diagnosed years ago with something called Wolf Parkinson's White's disease. And for the life of me, I don't know what it is, and I don't know what it means, but all I know is it has something to do with the heart. Can you elaborate for me, please? And thank you.
And I just want to tell you, I'm not a cardiologist, but I can help here. So it's an abnormality in the heart, and you have to be careful with certain medications that you take. And how did you find out? if I may ask.
Oh, sorry, doctor. Her call has been dropped.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So Wolff Parkinson-White, we call it WPW syndrome. It's a heart condition which is present at birth, but sometimes we don't know until later on when you have like a rapid heart rate, which is tachycardia. And so there's a abnormality with there's an extra electrical pathway between the upper and lower chambers of the heart. And so sometimes they can help with, you probably got diagnosed by EKG abnormal, also getting like a monitor. So with treatment, if it's symptomatic, there's medications to control the rhythm, the tachycardia. You can also do vagal maneuvers during the episodes. And then if push comes to shove, catheter ablation as well. And this may help 95% of the time, and then that 5%, it may not help. And so you just have to make sure you watch out for any, like, shortness of breath, chest pain, you're fainting or feeling faint, those things, and making sure you follow up with a cardiologist on a regular basis.
Thank you. Senator Haywood, do you think we have time for one more question, or what do you think?
Let's do one more. Final question.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to go live with Jerry. Jerry, you're live.
Okay, thank you for taking my call, doctor.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you? I have been diagnosed with AFib, and I'm on blood thinners. But my question is, how does that affect me having a heart attack or serious heart disease?
Well, I'm glad you got treatment, so kudos for you and noticing and getting the treatment that you need. And so the treatment is to help you preventing that heart attack and preventing that stroke. 'Cause some people can live with atrial fibrillation and not throw a clot, and others, and that's why you're on that blood thinner. So the thinner the blood is, the less prominent that you won't form clots and cause a stroke. And then the other thing is just making sure that you're not at a rapid heart rate, which can also increase your risk of a heart attack as well. So I'm glad you're getting treatment. You're on the right track, and just following up if you start having more symptoms, the shortness of breath, lightheadedness, any type of weakness or numbness or tingling in your arms or limbs, any headaches and things like that. So just make sure you follow those signs and get treatment.
All right. This has been a great discussion. Dr. Darby has so many callers, and your advice to all of them was so special, and I really appreciate your recognition that a strong support system can go a long way in maintaining general health, heart health, mental health, and all the above. Thank you for that recognition, and I cannot thank you enough for joining us tonight. Now,
thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And I also want to thank all of you who were participating on the town hall discussion, those who listened in, and to those who asked a question and gave us some suggestions and recommendations. Now, if you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You will be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. Thank you. Thank you again for your participation. I want to have a special thanks to Francis, Monica, Kevin, Donna, Angelique, Doris, Beverly, Virginia, Doha, Kate, Elizabeth, Jane. Looks like you had two Lindas, two Kims, Ann, Pam, and finally, Jerry. Thank you so much. Now, if anyone has any additional questions or concerns, you can also call my office at 215-242-8171. Or you can visit my website at SenatorHeywood.com. Thank you again, and thank you, Dr. Darby. Good evening, everyone.